Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Appreciate you being here. Rick and Tony are with me. Guys, let's jump right into the news. Big news from the Czech Republic this week. So the Czech Central Bank has approved a proposal to explore investment options in Bitcoin. They seem to be leading the charge in Europe. We'll get to some of the pushback they're receiving, but Tony, why don't you give your reaction to this news?
Extremely bullish news, man. It seems like certain European countries are, you know, weaning off of the EU and finding their own way to financial freedom. This is very bullish. Of course, you know, the news rattled certain members of the criminal EU cartel. You know, I think one of them almost broke a hip over the news. She was so nervous, but. I really hope he follows through with this and doesn't, cower, you know, based on, you know, the ramblings of the other members of that cartel not being happy about this. If he does it, I'm fairly certain other countries in the EU will follow suit and copy-paste that approach. And this is where we start seeing the acceleration of the euro's collapse.
Tony, you probably know more about this than I do, but my understanding is the Czech Republic, they are part of the EU, but they use their own local currency.
Their own money, which is not worth anything. I still have PTSD over one visit where a breakfast, you know, just a simple order of fried eggs cost 50 euros, just you an idea of how absurd their currency is and financial situation is in the Czech Republic. How people are living day to day is beyond miraculous. If eggs cost 50 euros, I mean, granted, it may have been in a tourist location that I wasn't, you know, aware of initially, but still, you know, what kind of golden chicken, you know, does it have to be to pay out 50 euro scrambled eggs? So I'm very optimistic. I just need to make sure that this guy carries on no matter what they throw at him, because it just takes, you know, one leader to, you know, get the ball rolling, and then I'm fairly certain others will follow.
Yeah. Rick, what's your take?
My first take is that I'm going to start cooking Tony his breakfast every morning, right? If you'll pay me 50 bucks for some eggs, I'm in the wrong game. But yeah, look, central banks buying Bitcoin, it's kind of almost like an inevitability. But I agree with Tony, it's bullish, right? Because, well, anybody buying Bitcoin, more people buying Bitcoin, whether it's individuals or institutions, is bullish, right? Like, more buyers than sellers, it's a pretty simple equation. At the same time, though, I don't get too hyped up and too excited about it, because at the end of the day, if you take a step back and really think through what's happening, the central bank gets to print money for nothing, and then they're going to use it to buy Bitcoin. So they're stealing from you to then go and buy Bitcoin. So, you know, it's not, if I'm a Czech person, I'm not going to be like celebrating this, because, okay, if a central bank buys Bitcoin, it's going to pump your bag. So whatever Bitcoin you currently have is going to go up in value and purchasing power. Good. I understand why everyone gets super excited about that. But if you're in a situation like me where you would very much like to increase your Bitcoin stack, I don't get excited about the prospect of competing with someone who can print money out of thin air, right? It's going to make it much more difficult to get your hands on your own Bitcoin. And the other thing I'd say, just to temper the excitement a little bit, is when a central bank buys Bitcoin, they're not going to give it to you, right? So like, if you're a Czech person thinking, oh, amazing, my central bank is buying Bitcoin, they're not buying it for you. They're not going to give you any sats. Like, there's a long distance between that, them buying Bitcoin, and that benefiting you in any meaningful way. I get the idea that, look, if your country is outperforming other countries, it might attract wealth. And, you know, then there's this sort of argument similar to the Cantillon effect, right? That this wealth will trickle down into the rest of the economy. But we didn't really see that with fiat money, right? I think the game's maybe more simple than people realize. There's 21 million Bitcoin, and you can only, it's a big game of musical chairs. You've got a race to try and find your seat. If you're already sitting on a mountain of Bitcoin, great. Yeah, you should be happy that the adoption is going up. If you're still not exactly where you want to be and you want to grow your wealth and you want to stack some Bitcoin, then it might be, you might be happier if they don't and they slow down a little bit, right? That would probably be a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that government is not a productive entity. And Rick, I mean, you harp on it all the time that you want them filling in the potholes and, you know, keeping the road and collecting your garbage, right? Those sorts of things. And I think I've really come around to appreciate these sorts of proposals to buy Bitcoin by governments, by central banks for what it is. And that is theft in some form or fashion from the people. It pumps the price. You can earn and accumulate less on your own. And presumably, if they are literally printing money out of thin air to purchase Bitcoin, whether it's a small amount, large amount, it's inflationary in terms of money supply. I mean, anytime, because they're going to buy it from retail or from institutions who then the money proliferates into retail. So I think it's easy to get excited about the number go up aspect of these sorts of announcements, but you begin to lose sight of the theft that's required for the number to go up in this way.
So yeah, I think Rick hit a point with this. If you're already holding any meaningful amount of Bitcoin, you're super excited because that's only win-win for you. Unfortunately, you know, Bitcoin was created for the people, right? But unfortunately, the people are the last ones that are benefiting from this. It's the wrong people that understand this and are now in a position to maintain their position on money, right? Even though they can't control it, well, you know, if the banks and the governments own a large portion of it, that means that, you know, the simple guy doesn't mean that he can't benefit from it, but that shortcut to financial comfort and wealth is gone. Like, you're going to have to earn your keep in Bitcoin, whereas he's just going to buy and sit on it and hopefully trick you into buying his garbage, the fiat money that you think you need in order to live.
So you can be excited about it symbolizing Bitcoin adoption growing, which I am, because we all love Bitcoin. But at the same time, I'm not going to go and shake this guy's hand, right? He's still a banker. He still works for a criminal cartel. He's still going to print money to buy Bitcoin and do it by stealing from everybody else. So, you know, just having that balance. And I do think a lot of these people on Twitter that get super excited about this stuff is like, I look at them and think, well, how much Bitcoin have you got? Because if you want it to pump your bags this year, right? Okay. Well, do you not have a 5-year or a 10-year plan? Like, do you literally just, you're literally waking up every morning like, please God, let my money increase in value today. Like, how desperate are you? It makes me think you might have the wrong strategy to this. I think if you've got the right strategy, you're probably happier when central banks aren't talking about buying Bitcoin because you still want to get some more.
Yeah, I think if I'd been in Bitcoin in 2010, I would be excited about this because I've done my time and waited my decade. But yeah, not so much now. Well, the good news is that, love the Czech central bank or hate them, they're pissing off the right people. So let's watch this video.
As a result, I'm confident that reserves will not enter, that Bitcoins will not enter the reserves of any of the central banks of the General Council. I had a good conversation with my colleague from the Czech Republic, and I leave it to him to make whatever announcement he wants to make, but I'm confident that he's convinced, as we all are, of the necessity to have liquid, secure, and safe reserves. Thank you.
All righty. Tony, you're smirking. I'll let you take this first.
Liquid and safe reserves. Yeah. Do you see how nervous she was? You know, like I said, when she found out, she probably wasn't expecting that news. This is why I'm saying she almost broke a hip and standing there talking on that podium, she was literally shaking because she realizes she has no control over this. She is hoping that this guy would somehow listen to her and back off with his plans. I'm laughing because part of me is really hopeful he'd just give her the finger. I mean, why would anyone listen to a convicted criminal talk about the security of money, right? I mean, that's the last thing any rational human being would do, especially now that there's a viable option not to do it. So I don't know how this is going to play out, but, you know, I'm sitting back here, you know, with my bag of popcorn, just enjoying the show because I know these people are on a ticker. They will not be around in 5 years, in my opinion. the EU is going to cease to exist in the way that it currently is. And that is a very good thing for Europe and the European people in general. You have to get rid of that cancer, not just in Europe, but worldwide. The separation of money and state is the only cure for humanity going forward.
Rick, I know you've got a poster of Christine Lagarde in your bedroom. What's your comment on her reaction to the Czech bank?
It's interesting, isn't it? Christine Lagarde, wow. So I think what's interesting for me, anyway, is a bit of perspective here. Like, I don't know if people appreciate just how crazy it is that Lagarde is even talking about Bitcoin. You know, like 5 years ago, everyone was laughing at us, right? You crazy kids with your magic internet money and all of this. And you know, we get trolled. Now, what I find enjoyable about watching Lagarde is that she is forced into a position where she has to talk about Bitcoin, right? For anyone who's paying attention, who's maybe on the fence about Bitcoin, it's like, look at the trend here. Look at the trend. Like, now Trump's talking about Bitcoin, Lagarde's talking about Bitcoin. You cannot escape this, right? It's like gravity. Everyone's getting sucked towards it. It's funny, like Tony points out, right, saying it's secure, they need it to be liquid. I'm thinking you're basically describing Bitcoin here. So the fact that you haven't understood this is still quite amusing. But hey, look, I don't know what to say. If I was reading between the lines based on what she said, she sort of said, well, you know, I've had a little chat with my Czech friend, and now I'm confident that he won't, do this or whatever she said, right? And to me, that read like, I'm kind of half worried that this guy is like tied to a chair in a back room or something, and they've been pulling his fingernails out and reminding him, listen, you better not buy Bitcoin because we're in charge here. What happens next? I don't know. I don't know how much autonomy the Czech bank has. I don't know if Lagarde gets to make the final decision or another group of people, or whether they can just break ranks and do it. I don't know. But like Tony, all you can do is just watch and enjoy the show and focus on what you're doing and understand that it's just more confirmation that we're right, right? So just keep doing what you're doing, get your Bitcoin, put it in self-custody. Lagarde will be a distant memory in a few years. You got to just work out what you're going to do.
Perfect. Well said. Alrighty. Speaking of the European Central Bank and Lagarde, they are redesigning their Euro bank notes and rearranging shares on the Titanic. They're launching a design contest later this year to help select the final designs in 2026. By the way, it takes them a year and a half to, you know, even get to this point where they can print different money. I like this comment, Rick. You brought this to my attention. I like this design. It's so good. 1,000 trillion. So obviously an allusion to fiat debasement. Rick, I'll let you take this one first because you're the one who broke the story to me. What's your reaction to them?
There's not much to say about it, really. I just wanted to share it with you because it's hilarious. That banknote is a brilliant design. It looks really authentic as well. And the scary thing is, you know, we've all seen the Zimbabwe dollar notes and stuff like that, right? And it's kind of funny, but also maybe a little bit prescient. That absolutely could happen. These people are just laughable, right? Like, we're all running around trying to figure out how to move money through a global network, you know, with instant settlement, no counterparty risk. And they're busy trying to figure out what bird they're going to draw on their little piece of paper. It's funny. And history will not treat these people kindly. When people look back at this, right? Imagine 100 years from now, reading the history, learning about where Bitcoin started, and then hearing that Christine Lagarde was running around trying to figure out what pretty pictures she should put on a banknote. It's ludicrous, but it's the world we live in.
It feels like the hurricanes in North Carolina from a few months back, and they're like, hey, we're coming to help, and then we're going to send you $700. It's like, everything in my life just got wiped out, and you're going to send me $700. And it's like, you've lost 99% of your value, and you're going to redesign the note, like, so it looks cooler. Like, what are you accomplishing here? Like, you're counterfeiting it anyway. Who cares if other people have come up with the technology to do that too?
Well,
Tony, what do you think?
It's because they think you're an idiot. That's why they think by, you know, recoloring a piece of, you know, worthless paper, they're going to change your mind and you're going to assume it has value. If she wants a great design team, all she has to do is walk into any Walmart or Costco, visit the toilet paper shelves. There's plenty of designs she can borrow from. You know, some of them are double layered, some of them are floral, some of them even have a scent. Like, why not release a scented Euro out into the market so that people would really love using it, right?
Scratch and sniff.
Yeah, scratch and sniff. I mean, there's no shortage of creative ideas for garbage paper. So if she wants some help, you know, just walk into any Costco or Walmart. I'm sure she'll have plenty of ideas. But by the time she releases it, I don't know if anyone's going to be around to, you know, to welcome it.
Yeah, no kidding. All righty. Up next, we have Wealth Squad Chris. Reshared one of Donald Trump's posts. So he said I'll click into it. The idea that the BRICS countries are trying to move away from the dollar while we stand by and watch is over. We're going to require a commitment to these seemingly hostile countries that they will neither create a new BRICS currency nor back any other currency to replace the mighty U.S. dollar, or they'll face 100% tariffs. And he goes on, as Donald Trump often does. The point, though, that was being made in this repost was basically the United States is trying to thrust its currency upon the rest of the world. And until a couple of years ago, that wouldn't have crossed my mind. It just, like, it seems normal in this fiat paradigm, but obviously it's insane. Tony, I mean, especially as someone who isn't operating on a U.S. dollar standard, you're not paying your taxes in dollars. What's your, like, how do you and perhaps others like you in your position view this sort of statement?
I don't like what I read, because, you know, you can't rule by force and, you know, coercion. That's not how you win friends. If you want to, you know, influence people the right way, you know, that's not the right approach. All this is going to do is build resentment and pushback, especially now that there are options that they can use. I mean, before Bitcoin, you could argue, okay, well, you know, what's my alternative? Not much, yeah. Right? But now that you've got a viable one, like, what's the U.S. going to do anyhow, even if it, you know, flexes its muscle? If collectively a large enough number of people opt out into something that the U.S. cannot control or manage, then they automatically lose by default, and, you know, they look bad at the same time. I hope that's not the approach, you know, Trump is planning on going with, because it just changes nothing. You know, there's already a large percentage of the world that hate the U.S., not the American people. They just hate the U.S., you know, politics because of everything that has been going on worldwide that largely the American people have no idea about. But that's why when you ask someone, you know, from, I don't know, some other country, what do you think of the U.S.? It's not an automatic, oh my God, I love these people. No, you've got a lot of people that genuinely hate the U.S. for legitimate reasons. But, you know, when you're an American and you hear these stories, for you, it's like, the hell are you talking about? Like, you have no idea what's going on because it's hidden from you in the media. But now that this whole mold is broken and news, you know, truth travels easier, well, you know, there's, you know, a lot more people are aware of a lot more things. And so to continue down that road, thinking it's just going to work out the same way it did previously, in my opinion, I think is a really, really bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you were a jackass and you wanted to have a party, but no one wanted to come because you were a jackass. And so you threatened to beat them up if they didn't come. Like, that's what we're trying to do with the dollar.
That's
now.
Exactly it. Like, how long do you think you're going to bully someone before he beats the shit out of you collectively?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, the United States has overplayed its hand. I love the ideals of my country, but our government has earned the hatred of many around the world. Rick, what's your reaction as another non-American?
I love Trump and he can sometimes be a bit of a blunt instrument, right? And his favorite weapon at the moment is tariffs. Right? I'm going to tariff you. I've actually adopted this strategy, right? I place tariffs on everyone as well now. If you come to my house, there's a tariff. You got to give me a steak.
That's a good idea.
You
got to
wash my car. Yeah, exactly, right? I'm going to start tariffing, right? And hey, listen, Trump, when you come back to Scotland to play a bit of golf, I'm putting a tariff on that, my man. Right? You got to buy me a beer. Anyway, right, jokes aside. this is fascinating, right? Because I can understand from Trump's point of view, he loves the dollar. He wants to project the dollar. And a lot of U.S. influence and power is because of U.S. dollar hegemony, right? And them being able to export inflation to all other nations, right? So the fact that Trump wants to, you know, maintain that status quo is not really any surprise. The thing is, though, and I still don't think Trump is fully there yet on Bitcoin, right? Because I don't think he fully understands the nature of the game has completely changed. Back in the day, when Bitcoin didn't exist, he could probably use tariffs and these aggressive tactics to get what he wants. But now there's an escape route, right? Now there's an independent currency that nobody controls. And I think most nations, are eventually, they're going to coalesce around Bitcoin. And here's the thing, you know, I think Trump can sit there and tell all these other countries, look, I'm going to place 100% tariffs on you unless you're using the dollar. I think it's not going to be long before countries realize, well, hang on, Bitcoin will place a 10,000% tariff on me if I don't adopt sound money instead. And the same is true, like Bitcoin will apply tariffs on the US. If you don't adopt a Bitcoin and you want to stay married to the dollar, then Bitcoin is going to tariff your ass, right? Because what are you going to sit in this worthless garbage? So another telling thing, I don't know if people remember this. I think we might have covered it on Bitcoin Banter. But do you remember when Putin came out and he said, who can stop Bitcoin? Nobody. Right? And he's right, man. Like, he's right. I'm sure Trump has a lot more other levers to pull and the transition won't be smooth and it's not like an instant thing. But I think Putin and some of these BRIC countries have figured it out. And America, I think, would do better to just embrace Bitcoin quickly. Otherwise, they could find their position at the top of the pile, you know, maybe a little bit harder to maintain. So we'll see. But yeah, you could. I'm not going to be forced to use the dollar. I don't want it. So I don't know. We'll see what tariffs I have to pay. But who knows?
Well said. Okay, let's move on to Tether. Tether brings USDT to Bitcoin's Lightning Network, ushering a new era of unstoppable technology. And they, I think, recently relocated headquarters to El Salvador, which, in light of this announcement now, probably makes more sense. Tony, I'm going to let you go last. Rick, give your thoughts, because, Tony, I think you have a really good way of sort of outline the risks of the stablecoin concept in general. Rick, what do you have any particular concerns? I mean, do you see this as bullish in any aspect, or what's sort of your take?
Very similar to everyone getting really excited about central banks buying Bitcoin. Right now, everyone's excited about USDT on Lightning. And for the only, it's always the same reason, because they think it might pump their bags. That's literally the only reason. I don't think people think these things through maybe as much as they should. So I'll give you some examples, right? Like, I don't want to receive USDT. I don't want to send USDT. I don't want to store value in USDT. The dollar is a shitcoin, right? Whether it's USDT or actual dollars, I don't want it. I don't particularly want to trade in it. So, you know, maybe I'm not the target market, right? I can accept that. But I don't really have any need to be sending USDT around. I have no interest in fiat currencies, and it is a proxy of a fiat currency. I'll try and be a bit balanced and offer a bit more fairness, which is, in some countries, right, where there's very, very low incomes, they want access to dollars before they want access to Bitcoin. Now, a large part of what's driving that is the US dollar is a lot more stable than some of their local currencies, right? And a lot of these people as well will have been locked out of the banking system completely, right? They're not in the position we are. They might not even have a bank account. So for them to go from nowhere to being able to send US dollars instantly around the world is a big step forward. And, you know, I don't doubt will massively benefit their life. But again, I'm not interested in using Bitcoin to perpetuate a US dollar system. Why aren't we just sending Bitcoin to each other? I know that might sound like a really basic and stupid question to ask, but that's kind of where I am with it. I also don't, Tether is not Bitcoin. And then a lot of the chat that I've seen on Twitter is people going, haha, this is amazing. You know, this will kill Solana and kill Ethereum because now we can do DeFi on Bitcoin. And I'm like, guys, what are we doing here? There's nothing on Solana that's good or interesting. It's all dog shit, right? So why do I want to put shit coins on Bitcoin instead of Solana? Like, this isn't a game where we win because Solana dies. Solana dies anyway. So I think people are a bit confused. I'm happy to say maybe I don't fully understand all of the benefits and I should read a bit more about it, but I'm happy with Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, and USDT is a shitcoin to me, so I don't want it.
Yeah, I'll reiterate one thing you said, though, and this is where I sympathize, is there are people who can't afford savings at all, Bitcoin or anything else, right? But having access to a less shitty fiat currency like the dollar is incredibly valuable to them. And so I see the utility and the value as a private company that Tether is providing millions, perhaps billions of people around the world. Part of the problem, in my view, and I think Tony will probably talk about this at greater length, is it's a single entity. Like, it's effectively as susceptible to corruption as a central bank. And surveillance would probably be even easier because there isn't a cash version of Tether. Like, it is all digital. And so for it to be co-opted would be rather trivial in my view. And I could be wrong about this. So while I understand the value, and maybe it helps serve as like a bridge between fiat and Bitcoin and kind of eases us in some way, and, you know, maybe, I don't know, you know, great. But I think, like anything, like self-custody, where people are like, oh, I share a key with a third party, or I keep it on the exchange because they show proof of reserves, or it's like, you don't understand, or I buy MicroStrategy. Like, you don't understand the counterparty risk that you are taking on when you do those things. And there's no such thing as a free lunch, and Tether is no different in my view. Tony, why don't you hammer anything I said and elaborate on any of your thoughts?
No, you guys are bringing out of extremely valid points. The thing is, you know, all the excitement over Tether and, you know, Bitcoin Lightning just illustrates how, you know, superficial people's excitement is. It's mostly about the number go up. You know, like, if pink elephants tomorrow started using Bitcoin, you'd see a lot of hoopla, you know, on Twitter as well, you know, because now it's automatically going to do something positive to Bitcoin's number go up. This has nothing to do with it. This is bad news. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, this is extremely bad news because it's a political play. This is the US government's just doing whatever it desperately can to keep control over the money worldwide. Now, how does it usually do this? Usually it does this by getting other countries to buy its debt, right? But now, instead of doing this, it's just sending that digital garbage straight into people's phones using the Bitcoin Lightning Network. So what does that mean? It means that the US keeps its power without, you know, needing the other countries to lend it any money. Tether is already a massive buyer of US debt. And it's got like the deepest ties with the US government. So to sum it up for those slow in the back, that's essentially a CBDC that hasn't been activated yet. And that thing can change like this in 3 seconds at any given moment in time. This is not good news. This is a way of keeping desperate people looking desperately for an answer even more enslaved and dependent on a system that is absolutely no good for them. So I'm not excited over this. If you want to help someone, another nation, you cannot, you know, give them a different version of the same product that has brought them to this point of misery. Tether is not an answer. Bitcoin, native Bitcoin, is the only thing that'll help, you know, a starving nation and starving people.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But it's tempting for Bitcoiners, because of number go up, to just see news of adoption, any sort of innovation, or not even innovation, but just technical change or advancement, and to assume like that means like that's good for the world. And it's like, no, like we need more people who understand the text of the Bitcoin standard, who say, okay, like the light bulb turns on for them and they want Bitcoin, they want to self-custody. Or if you're someone who can't afford savings because you're, you know, like, could you take a little bit of your income in Bitcoin and use the Lightning Network and just like stack a few sats? I mean, that's the beauty of Bitcoin at this stage of adoption is a sat is not worth a whole lot of dollars, right? Like you can earn just a tiny, tiny bit. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I think I generally agree with you on that, Tony. Okay, last one. Rick, I'm going to let you take this first. Why don't you explain what EconoAlchemist is talking about here? They did it, and he talks about the 256 Foundation and solo mining, but I think just maybe you explaining what all happened would be useful.
Sure, yeah. So, look, I don't know a lot about this story. It just came up on my feed, and EconoAlchemist, like, awesome guy. I know he's been on the podcast before, right? Super interesting guy. I think, like, the kind of Bitcoiner that you can really learn from and is really committed to the core principles of Bitcoin, right? And so he and some others have set up this 256 Foundation thing, right? And look, we should get him back on the pod because he'll do a far better job of explaining it than I will. But the general premise, as I understand it, is they really want to promote home mining and open source mining and encourage Bitcoiners to start hashing themselves, right? And the main thrust of the idea behind that is that over time, mining tends to centralize, right? For pretty normal business reasons, right? Like economies of scale. If you can build a big warehouse and have loads and loads of machines, you can drive down the cost of the machine, make your rig more profitable and that sort of thing. The problem is, that's led to like a lot of centralization of mining. And for anyone paying attention, I think it was either earlier this week or last week, we saw like 7 blocks in a row mined by the same mining pool called Foundry. Now, I'm not going to get into the weeds on this, right? Because it all gets a bit theoretical about 51% attacks and this sort of thing. But ideally, in the perfect world, it would be great to see mining decentralized, right? So no one is, there's no individual entity continuously being the one who's writing the transactions to the ledger. Because if that goes too far in the wrong direction and becomes too centralized, there's a risk that they can start playing stupid games and, you know, editing previous transactions and all manner of things that none of us want to see. So this 256 Foundation, they kind of like, as I understand it, this story is like they're trying to launch the foundation, promote it a little bit and raise some funds and that sort of thing. And man, it's a crazy story. They set up this public mining pool and asked everyone who wanted to support them to point their hash at this pool. And man, something like 350 plus miners all pointed their solo miners at this pool. I think at one point they had like over 1 exahash of hash rate in this single pool, which is a hell of a lot for like a little small collective of people. And look, against all odds, right, the odds will have been extremely slim, but they actually found a block like within the first 10 hours or something, right? Like, I don't know what you guys think, but sometimes you think like the universe is there's something bigger going on here, right? They want to see that win because it's such a cool project. It's such an important issue. Yeah. And hey, look, like, I think it should encourage everyone to go a bit further down the rabbit hole. Like, why don't you try mining, right? I'm not saying you're going to be able to replace your job with it and go to the beach while all your miners in your garage print Bitcoins for you, right? But there's every chance you win the lottery, you find a solo block, you contribute to the network, and you'll learn a hell of a lot more about Bitcoin. For me, like, unless you at least understand the general sort of method of how and why Bitcoin mining works the way it does, you'll struggle to ever fully grasp what Bitcoin is, right? Because proof of work and mining and how transactions are not processed by a single entity, it's kind of like a big crux of the whole thing. So if you go down that rabbit hole, you might win 3.125 Bitcoins, you'll learn more about Bitcoin, and you'll be doing something worthwhile. So yeah, it's a great story. We have to get him back on the podcast, man, because I'm desperate to know, like, what the hell was this? How did it happen? Like, there's a really good story in there, you can tell.
Yeah. Tony, you had a tweet recently that went somewhat viral on self-mining, and be curious to hear. Obviously, I think you probably think it's pretty cool, the story that happened, but just the importance of this subject.
I think the story that broke out was sort of like the universe confirming what I tweeted. I'm a big fan of solo mining. It is one of the coolest things and most, you know, educational things anyone can get involved in. And plus, you know, it keeps that the hope, you know, of, you know, waking up one day and finding the message that a block was found on your little device, you know, up there. I'm aware of the risks of centralized mining, and I'm not happy about this. I mean, there's no imminent threat, you know, right now to this, but I generally want to see more plug and play devices available worldwide that anyone can just, you know, buy off the shelf, plug in within 5 minutes, just, you know, let it do its thing and have it contribute to mining. We're going to be putting out a lot of information, hopefully at some point about this at the Bitcoin Way for those that are interested, just, you know, to keep people informed about this, or at least if they've never heard of it, become aware of it and see, you know, what little part they can play. One thing is for sure, there's a massive power in numbers, and collectively, you know, there's 8 billion people out there. So if a large enough percentage of people do their part, you know, like, I mean, that's a lot of, you know, a lot of weight to offset any, you know, risks of centralization, at least in my opinion, the way I see it. So I'm very excited about this. I mean, we've bought several solo miners, you know, just to play around with them to see, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what's cool and not. And we're going to be putting out a lot of details around this very, very soon. So if you're interested, stay tuned, man. It's a lot of fun coming our way.
Exciting times in Bitcoin. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to chat with you, tell you all about the services we provide. We help with proper 100% Bitcoin in self-custody, help with online privacy phones, Plan B residency options. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to talk with you. Rick, Tony, thank you guys as always. Lots of fun. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, Michael. Catch you later.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.